Hello everyone, I'm Tara and we're discussing social enterprise and the various elements of it. Social enterprise, as distinct from traditional economic enterprises, is an enterprise that maximizes profits, which has priority for social development goals versus only profitability goals. People and planet come first before your profitability. Now, when I say people and planet are more paramount versus profit, doesn't mean that profitability can be completely forgotten about, because at the end of the day, money is also important to keep the business running, to have scalability, and to completely forget about money would be a little ignorant and naive and definitely not feasible. But what one has to do is strike a balance between profitability, people, planet, and your social and economic impact. So continuing with this discussion, where do we stand globally in terms of the social impact market, social impact enterprises and their contribution to the global GDP and the global economy? First of all, certain dynamics, a lot of the over and above the planetary, when you have aspects affecting the planet or improving the planet, those of course are affecting every human being. But when you're talking about the enterprises which are going towards community development and good, then you are talking largely about people who are in the lower income bracket or in below the poverty line, bottom of the pyramid. And as data suggests, out of the global population, more than 5 billion people more than 5 billion people still don't have much of a disposable income. So you can imagine the number of people who can benefit from social enterprise on the community development front, whether it is healthcare, whether it is education, whether it is food security, whether it is livelihood, employment, disability management, sanitation, all of these elements. So coming back to where do we stand? As of now, if you look at the support from government policies in terms of government frameworks, structures, networks, then around the world, you probably have just about 1 in 5 countries which have an effective structure in place, effective legal structure in place, effective legislation in place to support social enterprises. So it gives you an idea of how much of the world is still left out of this whole movement of social enterprise. Having said that, the ones which are up and running and the startups, they have a lot of potential, and as long as they keep doing good, communicating this good, making the world aware of this good, promoting this good as a demonstration of yes, it's possible versus it's not possible, there will be more and more people coming into this, joining this ever-expanding ecosystem of the social enterprise. So now when we are talking about developing a strategy and choosing a business model, you can have multiple business models. A social enterprise can be for profit, can be not for profit. It could be a hybrid of profit and not for profit. You could be reinvesting all of the profits that you're making. You could be reinvesting part. You could be reinvesting all of it in a trust. There could be multiple ways. Your motivations could be driven by community development, driven by employment, driven by food security, driven by various other parameters. So it really depends on the entrepreneur and the idea and the geography, topography, all of that, in determining what sort of business model you should be adapting. So again, we're going to be looking at a lot of strategies, a lot of examples to see what sort of models people have adopted and how they are, what are the pros and cons, how they impact the whole sphere of social impact. So environmental analysis becomes extremely important because without analysis, you will not have a clear understanding of what you are getting into. You need to understand the mindset. You need to understand changing perceptions, the needs, what your challenges are going to be. I'll be getting into a lot of detail in this chapter on SEWA, which is the Self-Employed Women's Association. And how they have, through their environmental analysis and various projects, made a significant improvement to women and their families and the communities by and large. So there is no one strategy which works best for everyone. To give you an example, Patagonia, which has a very, very strong commitment to improving the environment, to land protection of at-risk land, improving, leaving a better world for our next generations. They are valued at more than $3 billion and have annual revenue in excess of $100 million. Now you see that there is a clear monetary model at play, but what is their primary agenda? Not to just be generating this money, but to generate this money in a holistic manner where they are positively impacting the community, positively impacting the planet, and revenue of course helps them to keep at it and scale up their operations. And all of their revenue and profits, all of their profits are actually going into a trust. And that trust then nurtures and pushes their initiatives for, supports their initiatives to keep their mission of protecting the planet alive. So their environmental commitment is being endorsed by the monetary success of the organization. So you have to understand that whatever strategy you adopt, you have to balance out these things, because as a small entrepreneur, you will have a lot of avenues, grants, microloans, venture funds, crowdfunding, various other incubation platforms. So you have to see which one is working best for you and accordingly decide your strategy so that you can balance out the social and the economic aspects of your enterprise. Now, what are the various components? Let's say that I, as an enterprise, want to come up with a social enterprise. I have a certain vision. I have a certain idea. What are the considerations that I should be thinking about? Okay, so I should keep in mind, what is the need I'm trying to address? What are the goods and services that I'm trying to launch? Is there a market for these goods and services? Do my goods and services have any unique selling proposition? Because why should people buy them? Is it just, is it something which is unique to helping the community? What should my products, goods and services be priced at? What should be the cost of producing these? What should my markup be? Because my markup might help me, handling, managing my costs or taking profits, generating profits which can be reinvested into the business. What are my competitors pricing at? If I have competitors in the industry, then what is the model that they are using? What are they pricing at? And what are the terms on which I am producing and selling these goods and services? Where am I selling them? Is there a massive disruption where I need to handle changing mindsets? Do I need to cultivate grassroots level communities, groups, so that there is a community effort to creating this change? Who are my suppliers? Where are they based? What sort of money, what sort of terms do I have with these suppliers? Are these suppliers reliable? Are these suppliers ethical? if I am a socially impactful organization and I'm interacting with suppliers who are not exactly, doing their business in a sustainable manner, either for the community or the planet, then that's not exactly a great strategy for me. And it's going to come back to me and, I'll get a lot of backlash from the market for that. So when we were talking about the B Corp certified, corporation in UK, which was into food and drinks storage, they proactively engaged with suppliers who were also, B Corp certified, or proactively encouraged their suppliers to go out and get themselves B Corp certified. So what are the supply constraints? What are the legal requirements? What is the geographical requirement? What is the legislation? Is there any sort of patenting which will be required? Trademark, licensing? Are there any tax considerations? Are there infrastructure considerations, etc.? So there are so many elements which, come into play when I'm putting my strategy together. So the process of strategic management, it has to be right from ideation to eventual implementation and post-implementation also in terms of monitoring, assessing, learning, unlearning, relaunching. So it is an ongoing process and not like a one-time process. Bottom of the pyramid has a lot of potential because, as I was saying, more than 5 billion people globally don't have much of a disposable income. So you can imagine the large potential that segment presents. But then for that potential, you also have a lot of challenges which are coming in. All of those challenges have to be taken into account. So for example, let's look at Benetech. It's an enterprise which is addressing education needs, especially of people with learning disabilities like dyslexia, etc., who are not able to process information and education in the same way that other people without these disabilities can. Now, they have created their own way of making this information and education easier to learn, easier to absorb in their own way, which works best for these, affected people. And they have their own model because in this, they have, they have their e-platform as well. In this model, they've given away more than, 20 lakh e-books. So obviously, there would have been a lot of considerations which would have gone into them figuring out what is sustainable, what sort of technology we can invest in, how much can we give away, what is the needs of our eventual beneficiaries, how can we make our communication, make our service so easily adaptable so that the person with the learning disability can understand it and absorb it in their own way that works for them, which makes learning faster for them versus, what they have been encountering in the past, which has obviously been very challenging. So you can imagine the kind of technology which would have been involved in this and the investment in technology and R&D. So here a very huge consideration for the strategy would become the technology. Yes, I'm addressing a learning disability need and probably in a disadvantaged segment where there isn't too much disposable income to pay for high-tech things. So how do I put a strategy together so that I can tap into this bottom of the pyramid and also make my service, product and service viable? Some of the elements of these core strategies, affordability, availability, all of these have to be assessed. So for example, Hello Tractor, which is an enterprise in Kenya and Nairobi, what they aim to do is that they realize that a lot of the small farmers out there don't have tractors, don't have their own equipment. And at the same time, they have a lot of tractor, thousands of tractor owners who may not have, land or who may not essentially be into farming. So their initiative brought together these, first of all, identified the availability of these tractors, worked on assess the market in terms of these tractor owners being open to joining this initiative. And eventually they got lakhs of small farmers to sign up for their enterprise. And the way it works is that there is shared use of resources. The tractor owners, allow access of their tractors to these small farmers. There is a pay-as-you-use, pay-per-use kind of subscription model which has been implemented, which makes it feasible for the smaller farmers to get access to these tractors without actually having to invest in the huge cost. So it makes usage of tractors affordable to them. Also, tractor owners who were sitting on tractors which were rusting and not really being used, a regular source of income has been created for them. So it is working to help both sides in this equation. And what was needed was to bring them together in a collaborative way where Hello Tractor played the catalyst of bringing them together to make it affordable for and make it available to the other party. Now, awareness and accessibility would have had to be created for this, for people to come and sign up. The very fact that lakhs of small farmers are now part of this initiative and availing this initiative, and thousands of tractor owners are part of this initiative, would have obviously required a lot of investment in not just money, time investment in creating awareness about it, going to the communities of the small farmers, seeing how open they are to this kind of system. You don't know the other kind of mental constraints they might have, the mind blocks they may have, the mental blocks they may have, and likewise understanding from the tractor owners what sort of openness they had, the conditions they would, the terms they would want, the a change in mindset that would be required out there for them to, tractors are very, very expensive product, and especially in that part of the world, for them to agree to become part of an initiative where they allow others to use this. So all of these factors put together are creating a viable enterprise, which would have all gone into, creating the strategy for this. Hello Tractor must have had to do so much market research and analysis. Now, these gathering data is very important. Data, information, these are gathered in multiple ways, either through one-on-one meetings, interviews, or through questionnaires which are sent out, community forums, meeting community representatives. Tapping into self-help groups, tapping into local groups, local representatives, all of this put together would have created, would have given the data to the Hello Tractor to figure out what their strategy should be, how they should go about implementing it. So data, acquiring your data even at the bottom of the pyramid is very, very, very important, and there are multiple ways of doing so. This holistic approach becomes extremely important so that you are not only creating change in your ecosystem, but you're influencing others also to follow suit. So let's now look at the example of Seva, which is the self-employed women's association, which is a trade union registered under the Trade Union Act in India. Now, it mainly caters to the women in the informal sector or the unprotected labor force, which is a very large segment of the labor force in our country. So, one of the key aspects that Seva had to deal with, and when I'm going to be looking at their pilot project in the Kutch district, then you'll realize how important that is. But one of the very large aspects was that they had to really build trust with the women who they were targeting the women from the low income backgrounds. Remember, they are working in areas where it's a highly patriarchal society. So they are working with women who don't have supportive households in terms of allowing them to step out, work, study, etc. So a lot of time had to be spent with the women, with their families, with local groups to understand, the mindset out there. Will they be able to change their mindset and disrupt the mindset out here? So a lot of that trust building had to happen. And then, of course, Seva has managed to combat these challenges and do a fair amount of good. They work on a two-tier structure, and they have these representatives who then eventually form the Pratinidhi Mandal, and they have this local community collaborative environment. Now, what happens in this collaborative environment is that each individual is not only accountable for themselves, but they're accountable for the entire organization, and they're accountable for the rest of the community is also responsible for this one person. So, especially like, for example, when we talk about microfinance institutions, etc., and we are going to be discussing Grameen Bank in detail later, then you will see that through these collaborative community groups, responsibility of repayments becomes collective, accountability becomes collective. So that is a larger influencing factor in building trust, creating those local relationships, and pushing people to accept these changes. Now, companies like organizations like HUL, the kind of footprint that they have in rural India, that footprint has happened through grassroots employment and creating grassroots trust. So those communities are very important from a trust building point of view. So now coming to an essential need and responding with an offering which is addressing an urgent need, or rather intense need specific to a certain area, geography. So let's talk about Seva. And when they had this pilot project in the Kutch region for providing, agenda being to provide full employment to the women in those low income communities. Now, when we're talking about full employment, that full employment means livelihood, healthcare, food security, for their families, all the benefits that come. Because these are women who have not had full employment otherwise. These are women who do not have welfare benefits otherwise in their, previous. They have small, odd jobs here and there. So here, giving them this holistic environment so that they can benefit, giving them a community where they are getting exposure to managerial experiences, they are getting exposure to enterprise, so that they can maybe upgrade themselves from being just part of the community, upgrade themselves from being a beneficiary to being a contributor in terms of being a leader, a manager, maybe tomorrow becoming an entrepreneur and an employer themselves. So here in the Kutch region, especially in the post-earthquake era. So we know that the Kutch region is very prone to earthquakes. It is a region which is very hard to live in from the drought point of view. There are multiple droughts. There is water shortage. And on top of that, the earthquake is magnified the plight and the deprivation of the rural folk in this region. So Seva, together with Government of Gujarat and Government of India, started these pilot projects to address employment both for the men and then subsequently, as I'll talk, for the both for the women and then subsequently, as I'll talk, for the their husbands and the men in the communities as well. So here, traditionally, the women were making some local soaps, etc., handmade soaps and all of that. And margins on those were very low. They didn't have direct access to the markets. There were middlemen in the middle. So net-net, it was a very meager, earning that they had, barely, sustaining them. So here when Seva came in, they had a pilot project to first assess what is a product that will work well from a margin point of view. What is a product which can, where the raw material procurement can be done from the immediate vicinity rather than having to go very far? What is a product which can be grown in this climatic condition as well? Because again, keep in mind, Kutch is one of the the second largest district in the country, and 70% of the land in the Kutch region is not conducive to farming. It is arid land, waste land, and the water, because of the high salinity in the water there, most of the water is unusable. So we are talking about harsh conditions where there is severe land degradation. Another thing, because income sources there have been so meager, lot of the families, in addition to farming or whatever other jobs they do, they keep livestock, because that livestock provide them an alternate source of income. Now, this livestock also are impacted because of the drought. And also the livestock that is growing, the goat, sheep, etc., they put a lot of pressure on the grazing land. So there is pressure on fodder supply as well. So in a scenario like this, how do you bring about a change where you can create something, grow something which is conducive to the area despite these harsh climatic and socioeconomic conditions? So after studying, they realized that the women, that aloe vera, which is actually called pharmacy of nature, and historically aloe vera in so many cultures has been seen as extremely therapeutic, and especially now for aloe vera, skincare is it's one of the top most popular products, natural aloe vera. So it was seen through studies, it was seen that aloe vera can be sourced easily from the immediate vicinity, making aloe vera soaps, handmade aloe vera soaps, etc., is something that the women are open to doing. Also, lessons could be learned from look visits to khadi gram udyog, soap manufacturing factories, etc., to see their best practices, because the current soap, handmade soaps, etc., that were being made by these women were not really serving much of a purpose. So this aloe vera was a very good, making these handmade aloe vera products look like a good product and service to bring to this community. Now, one of the challenges which was faced was that these women did not have any direct access to the market, and they were very open to making these aloe vera products when the Seva team spent time with them, but they wanted support as far as selling and accessing markets was concerned. So it was made clear that yes, we are willing to be part of this community endeavor, but we don't want to have the onus and the burden of selling and accessing the marketplace ourselves. So Seva first went in, did a lot of the study of the Khadi Gram Udyog factory to understand best practices, trained the women, not only trained the women in making these aloe vera soaps and products, but also brought in quality control. Because see, very often it's a matter of perception. People feel, oh, if it's a product which is being generated from a social enterprise or a charitable organization, must be rubbish, bad quality, which is not the case at all. Sometimes you can have the best practice, a best quality product. So to get that credibility of having a quality product, teams were brought in to quality control and monitoring was brought in to assess, to bring in standardization, to bring in a certain level of quality control. Then on top of that, packaging. How do you package it? You create a product, but with something like this, you need to have a ecologically healthy and a cost effective packaging, attractive packaging, which will ensure that your product is best received in the market. So a packaging training was given. All of these trainings were given. All of this was done. And on top of that, Seva came in with tie-ups with Khadi Gramudyog, tie-ups with various other alternate trade fairs, markets, exhibitions, etc., where these soaps could be, these aloe vera products could be sold and marketed. So that is how this whole strategy and business model played out in terms of understanding what is the need, what is available here, where is the gap that we have to bridge, how do we change the mindset, make them open to it, how does the profit sharing happen, how does the distribution happen. All of these elements went into implementing this project. Also, administration, local administration comes into the picture. So you have to partner with land revenue department. You have to ensure that collective farming is working properly. So these various elements come in, and then Seva, through tie-ups with Oxfam, through their Rudy bazaars, alternate bazaars, can market this product. So now this is the segment where they worked with the women. Now coming to the men. Now again, as I have said, this was an area where which was very which has severe drought conditions. The land is not really conducive to regular traditional farming. So after assessment and studies, etc., it was observed that biodiesel, which is of course something which is one wants to promote versus regular petroleum, biodiesel was something which could be produced from various tree seeds. And one of the tree seeds which was readily available in this region, in this in the land in the vicinity, was the Jatropha tree. Now if this biodiesel could be derived from the seeds of these trees, now that was very, very useful. That was very useful information, because that meant that farming can be done, this agricultural activity can be undertaken even in this arid area. It does not, all the other elements do not impact. Secondly, biodiesel coming from these Jatropha seeds can be easily blended with other oil products, with other, so it is very easy to use. Also, when it comes to capital investment in planting these trees, most of the investment happens in the first year, and after that it becomes self-sustaining. Another very important element, and very specific and relevant and tailor-made for this region, is that these Jatropha trees help to improve, and the biomass from this from these seeds helps to improve the quality of the soil in the region. So not only could the seeds be used to create this bio diesel, but the byproducts, the seed, could be used as feed for the cattle. It could be used for various other elements which actually help the whole ecosystem. So identifying a tree which, even in these difficult climatic conditions, can be grown. Another thing, that the seeds are ready for harvest in the non-rainy season, which made harvesting very easy, which made it simpler to harvest. The fact that it can be grown in the immediate vicinity has this sustainability. All of this understanding was very useful in creating this agricultural activity and endeavor, where this bio diesel could be created from the Jatropha seeds, and even the biomass, the left behind, became useful to contribute as income, to contribute as enriching the land around.